Thank you, Greg. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. A public company audit typically involves a substantial amount of work by highly skilled practitioners exercising significant professional judgment. At the end of this process, a registered public accounting firm issues its report on a client's financial statements and, when applicable, its internal control over financial reporting. An audit report is usually the only document related to the audit that the investors see. Among other things, it describes in general terms the work required to be performed in every audit, represents that the work was performed in accordance with the standards of the PCAOB, and most importantly to investors, states the auditor's opinion. As Greg mentioned, the current standards of the PCAOB do not only require the audit report to be signed by the audit firm. Because of the audit report's importance, commentators have, at various times, considered ways to make it more informative and whether changes to the standards audit reports could enhance audit quality. In addition to the Department of Treasury's Advisory Committee recommendation, the PCAOB Standing Advisory Group, comprised of members with backgrounds in auditing, accounting, corporate governance, and investing in public companies, discussed three times whether the standards of the PCAOB should require engagement partners to sign the audit report. Members of the SAG with backgrounds as investors have generally strongly supported such a requirement. These SAG members generally believe that a signature requirement could enhance the engagement partner's accountability and increase transparency. Some other SAG members have expressed concerns and noted the benefits of the existing requirement for the firm to sign the audit report. The staff believes that a requirement for the engagement partner to sign the audit report could improve audit quality in two ways. First, it might increase the engagement partner's sense of accountability to financial statement users, which would lead him or her to exercise greater care in performing the audit. Second, it would increase transparency about who is responsible for performing the audit, which could provide useful information to investors and in turn provide additional incentive to firms to improve the quality of their engagement partners, quality of all of their engagement partners. Many have suggested that an engagement partner who knows that he or she will have to sign his or her own name to an engagement report will perform a higher quality audit because the act of signing one's own name to the audit report may increase the individual's sense of personal accountability for the work performed and the opinion expressed, which could in turn have a positive effect on his or her behavior. Additionally, providing financial statement users, audit committees, and others with the name of the engagement partner might help them evaluate the extent of that engagement partner's experience on a particular type of audit and, to a degree, his or her track record. Such information could be useful to investors in making investment decisions and to audit committees in making retention or hiring decisions. Over time, additional transparency could also provide an incentive for firms to enhance the skill and experience of their engagement partners overall. Audit committees might increasingly seek out engagement partners who are viewed as performing consistently high-quality audits. The resulting competition could lead to an improvement in audit quality. Some have suggested that the firm's signature on the audit report is often used as a statement that the firm, as a whole, stands by the opinions expressed. The opinion and other statements in the report are those of the firm, collectively, rather than the individual engagement partner who authorized the report's issuance. Some believe that such collective responsibility promotes audit quality because individual partners risk not only their own reputations by performing substantial audit work, but those of their partners and employees as well. The firm's signature on the audit report may also reflect the fact that the audit often involves consultations with the firm's national office and others who may not participate more directly in the day-to-day audit work. The firm's signature on the audit report serves important goals, and the intent of any signature requirement would not be to suggest that the firm as a whole is not accountable for the contents of its audit report or the engagement partner is solely responsible for the audit. In addition to seeking comment regarding the potential benefits to audit quality of such a requirement, the concept release would also seek comment regarding its potential effects on private liability, other unintended consequences that might result, and potential complexities in implementing such a requirement. The concept release discusses that the signature requirement could be imposed by amending paragraph 8 of AU Section 508 in the Board's auditing standards and paragraph 85 of auditing standard number 5, each of which describe the elements of the standard audit report. These paragraphs currently require that the audit report include the manual or printed signature of the auditor's firm. A requirement for the manual or printed signature of the auditor with final responsibility for the audit could be added to those paragraphs. Additionally, the cost of release would seek comment on whether the current year engagement partner should be required to sign an audit report only as it relates to the year for which he or she served in that role. In general, the audit report contains an opinion on prior year's financial statements in addition to the opinions of those of the current year. For a variety of reasons, however, including partner rotation requirements, the engagement partner on the current year's audit may not be the person who served in that role on the audit of the prior years presented in the report. This may be the case even if the audit firm, the same audit firm, audited all the years presented. Similar issues could arise when prior period financials are revised. Finally, the staff is considering how an engagement partner signature requirement would apply when part of the audit is performed by another auditor. Under the Board's auditing standard, AU Section 543, the principal auditor must decide whether to make reference to the other auditor in the audit report or assume responsibility for the other auditor's work. If a signature requirement is adopted, it may be appropriate, for example, for the principal auditor that makes reference to the other auditor to also reference the other engagement partner. In summary, we recommend that the Board issue the concept release to solicit public comments for a 45-day period about the possible effects and complexities of requiring the auditor with final responsibility for the audit to sign the audit report in addition to the firm's signature. We would be pleased to answer your questions at this time.
Thank you, Greg and Bella. Are there any motions regarding this matter?
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Mr. Harris.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Board instruct the staff to issue the concept release on the engagement partner's signature on the audit report as recommended for public comment for a period of 45 days.
Is there a second?
Second, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Steve and Bill. The staff recommendation before the Board today is a concept release on whether to require the engagement partner to sign the audit report. The Board is seeking public comment on this concept release. I'd like to thank Bella Rivshin of the Office of the Chief Auditor and Jake Lesher and Mary Peters, Lesser, actually, in the Office of General Counsel for their research and efforts in preparing this concept for release. This issue has been discussed for several years, including by our own standing advisory group and most recently by the U.S. Treasury Advisory Committee on the audit profession. There are many legitimate and strong arguments on both sides of the issue and robust debate as to whether it would improve audit quality. Beginning with the passage of Sarbanes-Oxley Act in 2002, Wall Street and the public have come to better understand the vital role of the audit profession in this country and around the world. There is increased scrutiny of the audit firms and the audit process by all stakeholders who have an interest in financial statements. While legitimate questions have been raised about the wisdom of requiring engagement signatures, my current belief is that the benefits from increased transparency will outweigh any negatives. I see wisdom, however, in today's initiative being a concept release and look forward to gaining the benefit from a robust and informative comment period. I will now turn to my fellow board members for comment, and appropriately, we will begin with Steve Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you indicated, the concept release we are considering today asks the public and the profession to comment on the pros and cons of requiring an engagement partner signature on the audit report. The lead auditor, the firm's senior representative on the audit team, would sign his or her name, validating the work of the audit team and the opinion it reached. I believe that requiring the engagement partner signature on the audit report is important, not only to bring within the investor's reach a greater transparency and accountability in the auditing process, but also to advance the board's mission to protect the interests of investors and ensure the preparation of fair, informative, and independent audit reports. As you mentioned, in developing this concept release, the board considered not only the comments of investors, but the recommendations of the U.S. Treasury's Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession and the advice of the PCAOB's own standing advisory group, as well as the opinions of a wide variety of other interested parties. In addition, the board reviewed international standards. The Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales may have said it best in its 2005 report on the subject. The engagement partner's signature will, quote, aid transparency and help to strengthen in investors' views independence and objectivity and confirm that the partner was not hiding behind the name of the firm, close quote. We are voting today on the issuance of this concept release to further public scrutiny and debate over the signature issue. The engagement partner plays a significant role in the overall quality of every audit. For investors, adding the partner signature to the audit report acknowledges the engagement partner's key role in the overall quality of the audit and provides investors with another piece of relevant information about the audit. For audit committees, this additional information can aid audit committees in their auditor appointment or retention decisions. Audit committees also might be encouraged to learn more about and better understand the expertise of the individual partners providing auditing services to them. For auditors, firms may be encouraged to improve the quality and expertise of some of their engagement partners. For all these reasons, it is no surprise that investors and investor representatives who we have heard from overwhelmingly support a signature requirement. Here are a few sample comments. Damon Silvers, Associate General Counsel, AFL-CIO. Quote, to analogize to the SEC's world, when a 10K or S-1 form is filed with the SEC, a lawyer's name is on the cover page of that document. Not a firm, but a name. Close quote. Lynn Turner, former SEC Chief Accountant. If auditors have a problem with signing the audit, then as an investor, I do want to know that, because that does give me informational content. Kurt Schack, Managing Director, CFA Institute, Center for Financial Market Integrity. I think this is really about the truth of the balance sheet. We support it as an investor group. Cynthia Ritson, Director of Corporate Governance, Employees Retirement System of Texas. It would incent greater accountability. It would be informative. It would help clarify which part of the firm was involved in the engagement, in charge of it. Janice Hester Amy, Portfolio Manager, California State Teachers Retirement System. The simple step of requiring the audit partner to sign the audit report will, we believe, increase ownership of the audit by the audit team, a concept that will certainly help investors gain confidence in the quality of audits. Jeff Mahoney, General Counsel, Council of Institutional Investors. A number of council members are on record in support of the signature requirement, he said, adding, quote, I was struck that one of them at least put this item at the top of his list of things that he would do, that he thought would make an improvement. The board's current standard requires the firm itself to be the signatory on the audit report. This affirms the long-held view that the signature connotes the firm's responsibility to stand behind the quality of the audit. It also recognizes that an audit often involves many firm employees, consultation with the firm's national office, and sometimes outside consultants, outside specialists. Nevertheless, as was pointed out in a recent Business Week article, quote, audits are primarily human endeavors, and audit firms are very dependent upon the quality of their professionals, including their competence and decision-making skills, close quote. The concept release recognizes the important role of the engagement partner in audit quality. Ultimately, it is his or her judgment, supervisory skill, and professional opinion that show up in the audit report. In the board's discussions with the SAG and in testimony heard before the Treasury's Advisory Committee, members of the profession, public companies, and academics noted the psychological effects of putting your John Hancock on an official and public document. Arnie Hanisch, Chief Accounting Officer Eli Lilly and Company, said, I think the accountability issue is critical. I think having the individual sign their name as a partner of a particular firm is probably most critical. You get different behaviors when somebody has to put their name on something. Donald Nicolaisen, Treasury's Advisory Committee co-chair and former SEC Chief Accountant, said, I feel strongly that an audit partner should sign his or her own name in an audit opinion. I believe the investor should have the opportunity to know who it is who ultimately is accepting responsibility on behalf of the accounting firm to make sure that all the pieces came together. Paul Haga, Vice Chairman, Capital Research and Management Company, observed that a signature requirement, quote, could increase the sense of accountability and improve quality, similar to the requirements of CEOs and CFOs signing 10-Ks and internal control representations. I would note that CEOs and CFOs must certify that their financial statements are fairly presented as mandated in Section 302 of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. A recent research study found that practicing auditors said that those signature requirements had a positive effect on the integrity of financial reports. Similarly, a comment letter to the PCAOB from four distinguished academics who also are members of the auditing section of the American Accounting Association made this point, quote, while the academic literature does not directly address the issue of partner sign-off, research shows that accountability, which would likely result from having to provide a personal signature on the audit report, reduces auditors' biases in information processing and enhances auditors' consensus and effort, close quote. Based upon this and other opinions that the board has reviewed, I believe that an engagement partner signature requirement would increase the auditor's sense of accountability and responsibility for the audit report. It also would increase the transparency of the audit process for investors. I say this recognizing that some auditors are concerned that such a requirement would somehow increase their personal liability on the job. I would note that this issue was reviewed by the Treasury's Advisory Committee and by the European Parliament in its consideration of the EU 8 Directive, Article 28, Audit Reporting, and neither found the issue unmanageable in this context. Mr. Chairman, I look forward to carefully reading the comments we receive on this concept release and hope to hear from all parties, including audit practitioners, public companies, financial statement users, and most importantly, investors who supply the needed capital to these companies and whose interests are paramount to the board. I believe this is an important initiative, and I thank you, Mr. Chairman, for bringing it before the board for a vote this morning. I would also like to thank our staff, Bella Rishon, Jake Lesser, and Mary Peters for all their excellent work on this release. Bill Grandison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've looked forward to this day for a long time. I'm increasingly convinced that audit quality would be improved by adding a partner's signature to the audit report. Doing so would reflect the responsibility not only of the firm, but also of the engagement partner, as has already been mentioned so well by Steve. I have been struck by how often the engagement partner rather than the firm is responsible for deficiencies identified in PCAOB inspection reports. A support for adding the engagement partner signature is growing, as has already been mentioned. It's reflected in the 8th Company Law Directive in 2006, as well as the Treasury's Advisory Committee late last year. Mr. Chairman, I look forward to public comments that the board will receive on this concept release.
Charlie Newmark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd also like to start by thanking the staff, Bella, Jake, and Mary, for all their thoughtful work that went into this release. This idea has attracted considerable attention, including the support of the Treasury Department's Advisory Committee on Auditing Profession last year. Given the attention, I think the release does a good job of describing what has been proposed in other circles and environments and asking questions that will help the board evaluate the merits of implementing it. For myself, I'm particularly interested in the question as to what problem would this requirement solve. Many people have compared the idea to the CEO and CFO certifications that the Sarbanes-Oxley Act requires. As is well documented, CEOs and CFOs of companies with accounting problems previously routinely argued that they did not understand what was in the financial statements. In contrast, engagement partners rarely, if ever, deny responsibility for the audit report. They raise other defenses, but not that one. Nevertheless, it is undeniable that many people believe that requiring partners to sign their own names on a report would enhance their perception of their personal accountability for the opinion. And because of that wide-held belief, I support this concept release. As in the case of many proposed new requirements, it is often difficult to prove the benefits of requirement that has no track record in our environment. Therefore, I encourage commenters to focus on explaining whether engagement partners would perceive that signing their names to audit reports is materially different or would result in materially different type or amount of audit work, and if so, why. The second of the two questions posed today may be even more interesting than the first, at least to me, and that is the concept release highlights certain situations in which engagement partners today use work performed by people of varying proximity to the engagement partner. For example, work performed by network affiliates. If the auditors report that they would be troubled by a requirement personally to sign the audit report when that is part of a work has been performed by network affiliates, the problem, in my mind, may not be with assigning the report. The problem may instead be whether an engagement partner has sufficient level of comfort with the work of an affiliate to rely on it in the first place. This and the other questions in the release are well worth asking, and I support publishing it for comment. Thank you.
Dan Gill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the concept release the board is considering today notes, as others have already noted, the idea of requiring the engagement partner in his or her own name to sign a public company audit report is not new. Signature in the name of a firm has long been the norm in the United States. However, in 2006, the European Union's eighth directive required the signature of a natural person on audit reports. The board's standing advisory group has discussed the possibility of requiring a partner signature along with the firm's signature in 2005, 2007, and again in 2008. Moreover, in October of 2008, the final report of the Department of the Treasury's Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession, known by the acronym ECAP, urged the board to undertake a standard-setting initiative to consider mandating the engagement partner's signature on the audit report. The ECAP report states that the engagement partner's signature would increase transparency and accountability. In light of this history, I think it's appropriate that the board begin a process to consider a partner signature requirement. Investor representatives at the SAG and ACAP discussions have consistently supported the idea that the engagement partner should be expected to put his or her own reputation on the line by signing the report that's the product of the audit he or she supervised. As Charlie Niemeyer noted, some have also analogized an engagement partner's signature to the CEO and CFO certifications required by Section 302 of Sarbanes-Oxley. Given the board's statutory mandate, I think we would be remiss if we didn't take seriously the ACAP recommendation to consider this idea. At the same time, I think it's prudent that the board is beginning this process with a concept release and not with a proposed requirement. One of the most powerful laws to which we're subject is the law of unintended consequences. Before the board decides whether, and if so, how, to implement a partner signature requirement, it's important that we learn as much as we can concerning the likely impact, in order that we won't be surprised by the results. Along these lines, the concept release is aimed at generating input and views on a wide range of important issues that partner signature would raise. The release poses 16 questions for consideration by commenters. Issues that I consider particularly important include the following. What are the liability ramifications for the engagement partner? Are there steps the board could or should take to mitigate the likelihood of increasing an engagement partner's personal liability in private litigation? Should an engagement partner signature requirement be implemented in conjunction with revisions of the guidance in the existing standards regarding the responsibilities of an engagement partner? Are there tangible reasons to believe that engagement partner signature would improve audit quality? If engagement partner signature would indeed affect auditor behavior, how would the behavioral changes affect audit costs? What impact, if any, would engagement partner signature have on the ability of investors, other financial statement users, and audit committees to assess audit quality? If public identification of the engagement partner would be an important factor in selecting and evaluating an audit firm, would this promote or retard competition and concentration in public company auditing? I hope the concept release will generate thoughtful and practical answers to these and the other questions raised. I also hope that the commenters who oppose partner signature will make an effort to put themselves in the shoes of investors and other users
who see the signature as a way of promoting individual responsibility and transparency. Conversely, I hope that the signature proponents will candidly assess the possible collateral consequences. Like others, I want to acknowledge the efforts of Stella Rifshin, the Office of the Chief Auditor, and Jake Lesser and Mary Peters in the Office of the General Counsel in bringing the Partner Signature Project to its current stage. I suspect this will just be the first of many several opportunities to thank you all for working on this project. This is very much the beginning of a complex subject. With that, let me ask you a couple of things. I appreciate this is a concept release, so we ourselves are just asking questions that we may not have all the answers, or we wouldn't be asking them, but still illuminate a couple of things. First of all, we've been talking the last half an hour about a requirement or a possible requirement that the engagement partner should sign the audit report. Because as I understand it, the word, the phrase engagement partner doesn't appear anywhere in the standards, although the term auditor with final responsibility for the audit does. So who exactly is it that would have to sign these reports if there were an individual signature requirement?
Well, Dan, as you mentioned, the auditing standards refer to the engagement partner as the audit partner with final responsibility for the audit. And so it would be that individual who would have the responsibility to sign his or her own name on the audit report. Typically, that partner has the overall responsibility for overseeing the audit and signing the audit report. And the accounting firm typically designates one individual as the auditor for final responsibility of the audit.
I guess I spent a lot of time asking about definitions before, and I won't try to delve too deeply into that again, but is auditor with final responsibility a defined term, or as you just implied in your comments, is the firm free to designate anyone they like as the auditor with final responsibility for a particular engagement, regardless of how much or how little work they may have actually done on that engagement?
Well, actually, the board's auditing standards do define two terms. One is the auditor with final responsibility for the audit, and the other is assistant. And I'll take those in reverse. They define assistant as any firm personnel that is not the auditor with final responsibility for the audit, thereby meaning that anybody who's not an assistant is the auditor with final responsibility for the audit. The auditing standards provide high-level direction for both of those categories and provide specific direction in certain instances for the auditor with final responsibility as it relates to supervising and planning the audit. There's some specific recommendations regarding requirements for the auditor with final responsibility to attend the brainstorming session and other requirements in AU 316 as it relates to fraud. Therefore, under the board's auditing standards, you couldn't have a situation in which you had a partner who did not perform any work on the audit to be designated as the auditor with final responsibility for the audit.
At least they'd have to go to the brainstorming.
They would. There are certain requirements they would at least have to perform. Yeah.
Well, I won't go further into whether firms might identify some judgment-proof person and tell them to attend all brainstorming sessions and sign all audit reports. But I guess it seems to me that signing could signify at least two different things. And one is that the person signing believes that the firm's opinion is accurate or doesn't have any reason to think that the firm's opinion is inaccurate. And the other would be that they've performed the responsibilities that the standard lays out for an engagement partner, for an auditor with final responsibility. So, I wonder then if we're going to go down this signature road, if we might not have to define with more precision what the responsibilities of that auditor with final responsibility for the engagement are. I mean, I think that's something that's asked in the release. I don't know if you guys have a reaction to it here, but it seems to me that's an important subject that we have to be looking into.
I think, Dan, that is a very important subject, and the staff looks forward to receiving the comments on the concept release, and I think if the board determines that it's appropriate to require this type of signature requirement, then the staff will consider whether the board's auditing standards should provide more detail or specificity regarding the responsibilities of the auditor with final responsibility for the audit.
The release also holds out the possibility, or I guess asks about whether requiring a signature might be a kind of a pro-competitive step, because audit committees would increasingly seek out engagement partners who are viewed as performing high-quality audits, and then that in turn might be an incentive to firms to increase the quality or just training, whatever, of their engagement partners so that they will be sought out. I wonder if something like that doesn't exist in the legal profession today, where at least it's sometimes said that clients hire the partner, not the firm, and of course the other side of that coin is that prominent lawyers demand higher billing rates and have much easier opportunities to, you know, to move from firm to firm in response to economic incentives. Again, it's a question in the release, but I wonder if you think that might be the road that the auditing profession would go down, and if that would be a good or a bad thing in terms of competition and concentration of auditors.
Well, I think there are some similarities to that, but I would also note that the potential requirement for the auditor with final responsibility to sign the audit report would not replace the current requirement of the firm signature. The firm signature serves as an important goal, and the intent of any signature would not be a new signature requirement, would not be to suggest that the firm as a whole is still not accountable for the contents of the audit report, or that the engagement partner is still responsible for the audit. This would be in addition to the current signature requirement of the firm. The firm signature on the audit report may also reflect the fact that the audit often involves consultations with other firm personnel, such as national office, other partners with specialized expertise, and who may not directly participate in the day-to-day work on that audit. So I think if you would still have both signatures if the board chooses to do so, and it would still reflect many other individuals that have performed work.
Well, it'll be interesting, I think, to see how people react to this, and just in terms of the impact we have on competition.
I would also add, Dan, that the audit committee is well aware of the engagement partner from the inception. You know, when they take on a new engagement, the engagement partner and who that person is very important to the audit committee, because you not only they develop a close relationship, a lot of trust goes on between within this relationship, but also when that engagement partner has to rotate off due to SEC rotation rules, then you have a new engagement partner on, and again, they go through the same process that person, an individual that's initially assigned, you know, the audit committee has to be acceptable and has to be pleasing to them, because they want to make sure this is the right person that has the right experience, number, not only the number of years, but has the appropriate experience in that particular industry and area. And so they're going to scrutinize that person and make sure it's the right one. So the name of that person to the audit committee and who that person is, yes, is very important.
Well, they don't, at least as I was understanding, they don't really have the ability today to look at, well, easily, who's the engagement partner of our competitors, our peers, the big company down the street. And I don't know if that would have an impact on
them. Well, it's not evident right today in published media, but in publications out there, but the engagement partner of the firms is available and makes himself publicly available at the annual shareholders meetings. And so they are there in front of the public and to answer questions and respond to any inquiries they may have. So they are there and they know who they are at that time.
Well, let me ask you about something I suspect we're going to hear a lot about in these comments, and that's the impact, or possible impact, on the personal monetary liability of the engagement partner, or the person who might be signing these reports. And the release does acknowledge, I think, candidly, that there could be an impact on liability. As I understand, at least 10b-5 law, if a statement is publicly attributable to an identified person, then that may affect their, or cause them to have liability in circumstances where the public doesn't know that they're relying on a specific individual. It's so much nicer to be a client than a lawyer. I mean, before I venture further down that, I wonder if anybody could just briefly outline what they think the law in that area is today.
Well, I think I'm going to turn it over to our Office of General Counsel to answer that question.
Sure, let me try that. And about that, I should probably clarify two things. First, the release before the board today does not suggest, nor has anyone else during the consideration of this issue suggested, to my knowledge, that the signature requirement would affect the firm's liability itself, or, for that matter, add to the aggregate liability of the firm and the individual engagement partner might face for a decision on it. Second, as the release also notes, engagement partners today currently face liability in board and SEC enforcement actions without regard to whether they sign the audit report. Accountants, as you noted, may be held liable in a variety of contexts. Your question specifically raised Section 10B and Rule 10B-5, which is a significant source of liability. With respect to that, the Supreme Court has not specifically spoken to the question of when an actor makes a statement for purposes of primary liability under that section, and there's no consensus on that point in the lower court, as you alluded to. In some federal courts, such as the Ninth Circuit, anyone who substantially participates in the making of the statement may be primarily liable for it. In other circuits, such as the Second, the statement must be directly or at least constructively attributed to that person for that person to be held liable, primarily liable. So the concept release before you would note the unsettled law on that question and invite comment on what effect, if any, an engagement partner's signature requirement would have on the engagement partner's liability in private litigation, including Section 10B action.
Well, again, I think, as somebody alluded to already, the Treasury Advisory Committee's report says that signature shouldn't have an impact on partner liability. But whether that's a legal opinion on their part or a recommendation as to how this should be implemented is not clear to me, at least. I mean, do you think there's something we could do to affect, we can affect whether there's exposure in our enforcement proceedings, but is there anything we can do to affect exposure to private liability? Or maybe more to the point, is there anything the SEC could do? The SEC does have safe harbors in their rules and in certain other contexts. Could they do something to address this issue if they think that's appropriate, or would this have to be a matter for Congress?
Well, to start with, I mean, you're correct, of course, that the board doesn't have direct power to change the application of the securities laws by the courts in private action. Whether the SEC could create an effective safe harbor is a complicated question that would depend in part on what provision of the securities laws they were creating a safe harbor from. I would note that the Treasury Advisory Committee, in raising this issue, did note that the SEC created a safe harbor from Section 11 liability for Audit Committee financial experts when it promulgated its rules on that subject. And while I can't speak for the SEC or its staff on a legal question, there may well be some ability for them to create a safe harbor if there were additional liability under Section 11 and if they thought it appropriate to do so. So I think, again, more generally, if this turns into rulemaking and the board comes to believe that the requirement would impose some unwarranted increase in partner liability, I expect that's something we'd want to consult further with the SEC staff about to determine whether that's something they had the ability and inclination to address.
Okay, thank you. Well, just a couple other quick things. In the EU directive, I believe there's a provision for getting an exemption from the partner signature requirement on a case-by-case basis. Do we have any idea how that's operated in practice? Has anybody ever gotten an exemption or under what circumstances?
Well, Dan, as you pointed out, the EU provides for an exception because of a significant threat to personal security. The requirement in the directive is relatively new. I believe that the first disclosure provision would apply for fiscal years that ended on June 30th, 2009. So we don't have much information right now of how situations that have warranted that exemption or how it has been used so far. We are seeking comment on whether a possible exemption would be appropriate in this circumstance and under what situation it would be used. We recognize that the exemption, if granted, could raise other questions too, such as why an engagement partner signature was not listed and the possible consequences of omitting an engagement partner signature. Certainly this is an issue, an area that we would need to carefully consider.
And again, and that is, I believe, among the 16 questions that are asked.
Yes.
And there are a lot of technical questions here about exactly what the scope of this signature would be, what it would cover. I mean, I think you alluded to
situations where there's another auditing firm involved, either specifically mentioned or not specifically mentioned in the signing firms and issuing firms report and possible reference to other engagement partners involved. I'm not sure exactly why that would be a reference rather than their signature if they're, you know, if they're worth mentioning, but I guess that's a question for the commenters too. Let me just ask you one specific thing. Do we envision that this signature would cover both the opinion on the financial statements and the opinion on the company's internal controls? Would those be, bifurcated somehow, or would the scope be limited to the financial statements?
It would cover both. Clearly. It would have to.
I look forward to the comments on this. I suspect we'll get a lot of them, and that they'll be very diverse.
I suspect you're exactly right.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I'm increasingly struck by the fact that the international community seems to be far ahead of us in a number of transparency and accountability issues. And this is just one example. I think we ought to be the gold standard. But when I review what's being done abroad with respect to transparency and accountability, I think we got a little catch-up work to do. I'm fully aware of the liability concerns that have been raised. But somehow or other, they've been dealt with abroad. And now, granted that there are different legal systems and liability systems, but the European Parliament, in its Article 28 directive, states where an audit firm carries out the statutory audit, the audit report shall be signed by at least the statutory auditors carrying out the statutory audit on behalf of the audit firm. In exceptional circumstances, member states may provide that this signature need not be disclosed to the public if such disclosure could lead to an imminent and significant threat to the personal security of any person. In any case, the names of the persons involved shall be known to the relevant competent authorities. Same thing in the UK Companies Act of 2006. The senior statutory auditor is not, by reason of being named or identified as a senior statutory auditor, by reason of his having signed the auditor's report, subject to any civil liability to which he would not otherwise be subject. And then, as Bell has referenced, you know, both of these, the Treasury Advisory Committee, the committee's final report notes the signature requirement should not impose on any signing partner any duties, obligations, or liability that are greater than the duties, obligations, and liability imposed on such persons a member of an auditing firm. This language is similar to safe harbor language the SEC promulgated in its rulemaking pursuant to the Sarbanes-Oxley Section 407 for Audit Committee Financial Experts. So I think there may be a number of ways to potentially deal with this issue. I also want to note that, I do appreciate the auditor liability issues associated with the engagement partner signing the audit report. However, as I said earlier, these issues were discussed by commentators to the Treasury Advisory Committee and by our SAG and are reviewed in the board's release. I think it's important to note that in all of those discussions, no one has suggested that having the engagement partner sign the audit report would increase the firm's liability in any respect. The previous discussions also note that the lead engagement partner already may be held responsible today in proceedings brought by the SEC and PCOB, as well in some types of private litigation for seriously deficient audits that harm investors. Since the engagement partner is designated by the auditing standards as the person with final responsibility for the audit, I think some investors may be surprised to learn that there could be any situations today in which a firm can be found liable in private litigation for an audit. But the lead engagement partner for that audit faces little or no personal legal responsibility. More generally, as I think it's been referred to, the PCOB's mission is to promote high professional standards, to improve audit quality, and to further the public interest in the preparation of informative, fair, and independent audit reports. In considering standards related to the preparation of audit reports, the critical question is how well the standard will advance those objectives. In some cases, standards that advance those objectives in important respects may pose some prospect of liability that did not previously exist. I believe that we should not approach every standard setting as if we may pursue our mission only in ways that would avoid any potential for any new liability. In any event, I am not persuaded the concepts we are discussing today would do so in any significant way. And again, as I stressed at the outset, I look forward to reading the comment letters from all interested parties to the subject.
Thank you. If there's no further discussion, I'll put the question to the board. All those in favor of approving the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the motion is carried. There is no further...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, there is one additional item of business which is not on the agenda, and that is to recognize that this is going to be your last meeting here with us as our chairman, to thank you for the opportunity to have you here to lead us, to keep our minds always focused on what is in the best interest of investors, and it's just be a great guy to work with. So you're going to be missed, and I'm sorry to ask you to digress from the canned agenda which we are working with, but I felt this was sufficiently important to go against normal protocol.
Well, thank you, Bill, and thank all of you. And
well, Mr. Chairman, as long as Bill. I just wanted to say how very much I appreciate your friendship over the years and the opportunity to work with you. I mean, we go way back, and I appreciate that very much. You made my transition to the PCOB a very easy one, and you've always had a very open door to me. In addition to your work and leadership on among many other issues, they include internal controls, helping to take the PCOB from a startup to a steady state operation, overseeing a risk-based approach to inspections, enhancing and expanding our Office of Research and Analysis, attracting experienced top talent to the PCOB, establishing the board's first strategic plan, enhancing coordination and cooperation with the boards, with the PCOB's international counterparts, and I could go on at some length. You've also, among other things, laid the foundation for increasing investor participation at the board and internationally, increasing the board's transparency with respect to our website, and improving our process for reviewing inspection reports. So for all these reasons, I want to thank you.
You're very welcome.
Sounds like you've been pretty
thank
good.
Thank you.
Well, let me just say, thank you.
I'm rather enjoying this.
Well, we all have choices. You had a number of choices. You've left a very great position, actually, and to come join us. And thank you for being our leader for these last 3 years, and I've enjoyed working with you as well.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank you.
Well, it's hard to think of what to add after those comments. So let me just say it's been a privilege and a pleasure to work with you, and I think these have been three remarkably successful years.
Well, I'm getting more credit than I deserve today, but today I'll take it. So thank you. and thanks to all of you. And I've said I think many times over the years that I'll probably get more credit than I deserve for the work that all of you do, and that certainly has been the case. I hope everybody here knows that much of the credit that's gone to all of us is the work that we've done collectively. So thanks to all of you. And with that, I'll adjourn the meeting, and I'll adjourn the open meeting, and we'll reconvene the closed meeting right at 12. Thank you very much.